Welcome to our Leadership Intelligence podcast series. My name is Charles Rogel, and I'm the Vice President of Products and Marketing for DecisionWise. Today is a special podcast to introduce our new book, The Employee Experience, How to Attract Talent, Retain Top Performers, and Drive Results. I'm here with the authors today, Dr. Tracy Maylett.
Hi, Charles.
And Matt Ride.
Good morning, Charles.
Tracy is the CEO of DecisionWise and holds a doctorate degree in organization change. He's also the co-author of the book Magic: 5 Keys to Unlock the Power of Employee Engagement. Matt is the Chief Operating Officer at DecisionWise and holds a JD degree, and he runs our company's operations. So first of all, Tracy and Matt, why this book?
You know, it really started with the whole concept of magic. Our previous book was released in 2014, was Magic, 5 Keys to Unlock the Power of Employee Engagement. In that book, we did a study. The study was actually over a period of 3 years, where we received survey responses from over 14 million survey responses. And from that, we determined that there were five main keys, which is forms the acronym MAGIC, that create that power of employee engagement. As we were writing that book, we realized that what we were doing is we were giving those keys, meaning, autonomy, growth, impact, and connection. But what we hadn't done, what was needed to be done after that book, was kind of the field manual. How do I implement these things? Mm-hmm. Engagement is obviously very, very powerful. There's no question about that. When we create an engaged workforce, we create a workforce that delivers on results. And so this book was intended to be kind of the field manual. How do I implement this, and what does that really take to create that level of engagement in an organization?
Well, and the book was also more specific to engagement and not as encompassing for the whole entire employee experience.
Absolutely. It was a book written about engagement. Engagement is a subset of the employee experience, and we'll talk more about that throughout this podcast of how that comes about.
So explain the term the employee experience. What exactly does that mean, and why the title?
Well, I can answer that, Charles. I think one thing we want to make clear is that the employee experience is not the employee life cycle. Mm-hmm. Okay? For us, at least at DecisionWise, we're not in the business of trying to create a system that manages an employee from the first impression they have of the organization to onboarding, to performance reviews, to eventual exit. That chronological series of events is the employee life cycle. That's important. But if that's all you build, you just sort of build a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
And your people are widgets that just travel on this conveyor belt. And that feels good, and that feels sort of compliance oriented. We're stepping above that and saying that the employee experience is the operating environment in which your people exist, the way they think, feel, perform, and how they do their best work.
Well, Matt, I think you bring up an important point there too, which is the concept of this is not about a chronological series of events. We think that employee starts and then we have a life cycle that is about an annual performance review or whatever that is. The employee experience is the sum of all experiences that individual has with that organization, and we can't necessarily put them on a chronological scale.
And the book's significant in that we make a point, and I think a very important point, which is you can be deliberate in how you approach the way your employees interact with you. It's not just reactive. You just don't inherit it. It just doesn't happen, and you're just sort of always in response mode. Mm-hmm. You can actually create an environment where you build the type of interactions or culture that you need in order to achieve the results you want. This is a business book because at the end of the day, you want to win. You want to be a winning organization. And to do that, you need people put into the right places, doing the right things, and fully engaged, which is what Magic was about.
So how does this differ from the customer experience?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the customer experience to begin with. We use a phrase in the book that we call you're digging in the wrong place.
Yeah.
And the idea came from an Indiana Jones reference where they're trying to find the lost ark, and they realize that the Nazis, the size of the staff that they're used to measure where the ark was actually the wrong measurements, the wrong size. And Indy and his companion look at each other and they say they're digging in the wrong place. When it comes to customer experience really is about the relationship or the interactions that a customer has with an organization. Employee experience is similar, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, but the whole idea here is that if you really want to build a great customer experience, people are digging in the wrong place right now. They're not looking at the right element, which is really, in order to have, we call this, by the way, the law of congruence, the law of congruent experience, that if you want a great customer experience, you have to first start with the employee experience. So let me give you some data. Mm-hmm. Regarding the customer experience, this is not going away. This is a big deal. There's a 2014 report that says that the amount invested or the market for customer experience management services and technology will grow from about $3.77 billion in 2014 to somewhere in the neighborhood just shy of $11 billion in 2020. So companies are spending a lot of money on the customer experience, but they're digging in the wrong place. They should be looking first at what creates that customer experience, which is really the employee.
So in other words, the feelings or the attitudes that employees have impacts what a customer experience is.
Absolutely, which is what we refer to as the law of congruent experience. My customer experience is going to be a direct relationship of that employee's employee experience.
So what's then the book about? So what kind of advice are you giving managers on how to create this employee experience?
Well, I want to jump in again because I don't want to give the impression that we're just saying, hey, make your customers or your employees' lives better.
Right, yeah. Right.
That's not at all what we're saying. We're not asking you to put a foosball in every corner of the office and to bring food trucks in on a daily basis. We're saying that your organization needs to have a clear set of expectations, a framework, a contract, if you will, and we'll come back to that, mm-hmm. of what is expected and how does an employee align itself with the overall mission and purpose of that organization. That's what we mean by the employee experience. It's really aligning employees to where the organization wants to go. And you have to do that. You have to do that periodically. I mean, it's not every organization isn't stagnant. You know, even at DecisionWise, we look and say, do our people have a sense of where we want to be in 2 years, 5 years, and 10 years? And we make sure that we're teaching and talking about that so that they can get a sense of where we're going.
So talk more about the that expectation alignment and some of those other concepts.
When you think about what you're trying to achieve, an operating environment that produces results, the organization needs to lay out for the individual, these are what we expect from you, mm-hmm. okay? They come with a set of expectations. Alternatively, the employee approaches their work with a huge set of expectations as well, okay? And those expectations sort of pass in the night sometimes. They're not aligned.
Yeah.
And we call that expectation alignment disorder, you know, or the fact that it's we joke about it. It sounds like something that should be on a commercial for a pharmaceutical.
Wasn't there a drug on TV that cures that?
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, the leader's job is to align those expectations, to find where gaps exist, and to make sure that they're aligned. So we're not saying that you need to capitulate to the employee's expectations. That, in fact, what you need to do is just make sure that the employees, what they expect is as congruent as possible with what the organization expects. I think Tracy has a good illustration of that in the research you did on expectations within couples.
Yeah, some interesting research has been done by several universities regarding the experience that couples have. So they'll take a set of couples. This particular experiment that I'm thinking of in particular involved 87 different married couples. They'd been recently married couples. And it was very interesting to see what happened as they tracked these couples over a period of 4 years. One of the things they found is these couples went in with certain expectations. Those expectations were tracked over a period of time. Eventually, by the end of the study, there were 17 of these couples that didn't make it through. They were divorced by the end of that. And they were looking at the success of these couples, and they measured a couple different things. The first thing that they measured was interaction. Did they have the social skills that they needed to deal with things like conflict? So when you get in a married situation and there's going to be conflict, did they have the ability, the coping mechanisms to deal with that conflict? And they rated them based on a series of skills and abilities. So they'd looked at the group that was high in this ability to make things succeed and groups that were low in this ability, these couples. They also looked at some other things, such as expectations. So did the husband have expectations of his wife and the wife expectations of the husband? Were they high? Were they low? They looked at all kinds of things, such as, I expect you to fulfill certain assignments that are masculine or feminine. They looked at things such as weight gain and all kinds of other things that were expectations. The interesting things out of these studies, what came about was the notion at the very end of the study when they realized that those couples that had social coping mechanisms did very well. That makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. And who also set expectations that were reasonable expectations, they did well at the end of the marriage. What was also very interesting is some couples who had very, very high expectations and very high coping mechanisms or skills, those marriages didn't last as long as those who had low expectations and low coping skills. So what these studies show is it's not necessarily about the skills or abilities that creates that relationship. It is about whether those expectations in that relationship are met. So some people may take a look at this study and say, it's all about setting low expectations with your spouse, right?
That's what I try to do.
Very good. I know that my wife now has very low expectations of me, right. But I don't know how it was at the very first. The idea here is that your success in a relationship is going to be based far more on whether expectations are met and clarified than they are the skills that are brought into that relationship. Now let's translate that back to the office environment or an organization. When those skills are brought in, and we may bring in the best players, we search for the best people around, that's less important to the success and engagement of that individual in that relationship than the expectations being clarified up front and being met throughout that relationship.
So if you're great at handling conflict, it doesn't really matter if your expectations are still misaligned.
To a degree, yeah. That ability to handle conflict is certainly important in any engagement. But it's less important, according to these types of studies, and there have been a number of them done now, that less important than the actual expectations being met. Now, those expectations could be very high or very low. It's whether or not expectations are clarified and met. That's what Matt's referring to as the expectation alignment or expectation gap.
Excellent.
So as long as people think you're going to do a horrible job and you do a horrible job,
least
you're all good.
Through.
Exactly.
Right?
Least
you know?
Managers will be happy. Everyone's good.
That's what we're saying. That's the we wrote the book, and that's the secret.
I think we need to take just a moment and define what the employee experience is.
Sure.
So we use the actual definition that the employee experience is the sum of perceptions that employees have about their interactions with the organization in which they work. And notice that we use the idea of perceptions. So it's very possible that two employees with identical experiences may actually have very dissimilar experiences because of their perceptions. A lot of those perceptions come because of what they expected. So we notice this quite often when we bring in a new group of, for example, we hire a lot of very, very sharp students. They may be MBA students, they may be recent grads, and they come in with a nearly identical experience. They're onboarded the same, they go through similar processes, but they may have different expectations out of the organization. And what we're saying through this book is that expectation alignment really decides whether or not those employees and individuals are going to be engaged.
Yeah.
Not even as much as that actual events that take place or transpire.
Now you categorize these different expectations into three different buckets, and you call them contracts, basically, the brand contract, the transactional contract, and then the psychological contract.
Yeah, I want to make sure people understand why we use the term contract. It's a construct or a kind of a metaphor as a way to deal with this concept of expectation alignment. Mm-hmm. It's how you unpack it. And so when you're saying, hey, I have a contract with that person, what you're saying is I have a whole lot of expectations with that person, expectations that I bring to the table, that they bring to the table, and my contract reflects those expectations. And so when we use the term contract, we're talking about it beyond the legal sense, and we're talking about it of this entire gambit of expectations that exist. And it's just an easy way for us to say, hey, what's the contract at play right now? Is it between you and your team? Is it the contract between the organization and the employees that were just onboarded? That's why we use the term contract.
And so talking about the brand contract or the transactional or psychological, what do those categories mean?
I'll jump in. So those are the three that we identify right up front. And mm-hmm. you could have various contracts, but there are at least these three that are just absolutely critical, and you have to pay attention to them. And they're the brand, the transactional, and the psychological, as you indicated. They sort of follow how an employee interacts with an organization. Mm-hmm. The brand refers to the concept of what am I expecting going into this relationship with this organization or this company? How do I perceive them? What are they going to be like? What will my day be like? How do they, if I'm a woman, is there a glass ceiling? Will I be given fair pay? That's all associated with the brand. And brand, Tracy even points out, the brand relates to, as even in individual relationships, you have a brand. Mm-hmm. He talks about the brand you have when you're dating.
right.
You know, so that's the brand contract. And we, I think in the industry, the more technical term is we call it the employee value proposition. But what is it about what's out there that makes that employee want to be a part and affiliate themselves with that organization?
Yeah, the brand contract really is about that image, that face, that facade that your company or your organization has. Every relationship has a brand contract. Matt mentioned a relationship of a marriage or a spouse or a dating situation. When you're dating, you put forth a brand. This is the image that I have. This is who I am as an individual. And then that partner makes the determination of whether or not that brand was what he or she wanted and whether or not that's being honored. The same thing happens with getting into an organization. You may decide you want to be part of a technology organization because the image or the brand that they portray is we're fast-paced. We may even have the fraternity environment. We have, you know, foosball tables and everything like this, and you have your nap pods and whatever that may be. That may appeal to some individuals. That is the brand that's being portrayed. Other organizations may portray a very professional brand or a brand of efficiency or a brand of innovation. That's the brand that people join.
Yeah.
Now, when Matt talks about the alignment, it is whether or not I feel that brand is being honored when I get into the company, whether it matches myself as an individual fit or an individual piece.
Okay. And then when you're talking about the transactional and psychological, those are then the contracts that are established once you are an employee?
Yeah, I mean, the transactional, I think, speaks for itself. It's the employment contract that you might sign. Mm-hmm. It's the employee manual. It's the policies that pertain. It's the safety rules that pertain to your division if you're in a manufacturing facility. They're the very clear-cut, do this, don't do that, policies and procedures, contracts that we have in place. And some organizations thrive in this area. They are very good at being very clear about what they want. And when you have good transactional contracts, people are very clear. Then you have an efficient organization. You have employees that are satisfied. The company keeps its promises. Mm-hmm. But you're not quite ready to get to the next level yet. You're not getting the very best out of your people because there's still this other contract that you have to deal with, which is bigger and even more important and also more difficult to manage, and that's the psychological contract.
We call the transactional contract the overlooked workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we say that is because many people don't realize the level of engagement or the level of satisfaction that a transactional contract brings with it. Transactional contract, as Matt mentioned, it's the very explicit things. It's the things we talk about. It could actually be written down. It could be signed. It could be part of a policy manual. But these are the things that are very clear and very explicit. One of the things we find in organizations where employees aren't satisfied, now we're not talking about engagement, we're talking about satisfaction. Satisfaction means my basic needs have been met, and it's a very transactional relationship. One of the things we find is that transactional contract has not been clearly specified. In other words, we sit down with individuals and say, what's expected of you of your boss? And they say, I don't know. We sit down with the boss and they say all of these things. Well, that's because there's alignment disorder there. There's a huge alignment gap. Those expectations have not been clearly laid out. So when we see organizations or individuals that are dissatisfied, the first thing we take a look at and say, tell me about your transactional contract. Do you know what's expected of you? And is that being honored? And are both sides of that being fulfilled? If not, we can't create engagement nor satisfaction. So transactional contracts, very, very important, and many organizations overlook that. It's just not in place.
And then as the psychological contract, then that really drives engagement and performance.
We believe that, first of all, the transactional contract generates satisfaction, so I'm satisfied with my job. The brand contract generates commitment. So I joined this company, and I'm committed to this company because of the brand. I work for this apparel company, and I love their brand. I'm committed to it. The transactional contract generates satisfaction. I'm satisfied with my job. I'm not necessarily thrilled about it, but you know, I'm here. I'm satisfied. Engagement is brought about by the psychological contract. So psychological contract says not only do you get my hands, but you also get my mind, you get my spirit, you get my soul, you get my heart. I'm here. I'm investing the energy and the action because I am part of this organization. That's what the psychological contract means and brings.
The challenge with the psychological contract is you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Right? It's the unwritten expectations. It's the implicit rules. It's we joke about it and even make a reference. And in baseball, there are inside baseball rules or the unwritten rules of baseball.
Right.
There's that in every relationship and there's that in every organization. And when you create alignment and get on top of your psychological contract, what you're doing there is creating trust. And trust is this currency, this fertilizer that really allows magic to take root mm-hmm. and to grow. And we mean by magic the elements of engagement. When there's an engaged workforce that is moving ahead and really powering your company, you need trust to be part of that. So the psychological contract is the most important, probably, of all of the contracts, and also the most difficult to master and understand.
So tying it back to the title of the book, The Employee Experience, How to Attract Talent, Retain Top Performers, and Drive Results, the brand contract then is highly related to attracting talent. The transactional contract is about retaining your top performers, that's those satisfaction elements. And then the psychological contract is all about driving results and engaging people in your organization.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, the psychological contract is really the set of unwritten, implicit set of expectations and obligations that define the exchange of that relationship. So one of the key pieces of this is that they are not explicit, mm-hmm. and they vary from person to person. So to your point, in the absence of a very clear brand contract and a very clear transactional contract, the psychological contract takes over. Okay, so that's why that's so important. When those two are not in place, when we don't have clear, explicit definition of the relationship, then the implicit takes over, and I tend to form my own psychological contract.
And that's when it gets way out of whack.
It can. Yeah, it absolutely can.
I'm really glad that Tracy brought up that point because it is absolutely critical, and I want to underscore that, which is when absent clear expectations, the psychological contract takes over, and more importantly, it's the employee's side that seems to drive.
Right.
Right? It's their expectations that become dominant in the relationship. And now you find yourself being in response mode as opposed to building mode or proactively moving your organization forward.
So let's talk a little bit about the audience then for this book. Is it mainly written then for business owners or CEOs who are trying to define their culture? Is it the HR professional who's trying to manage their talent or the manager who's trying to create a high-performing team?
Well, it is a little bit of all of the above, certainly there. When we wrote magic for the masses. So this was understanding your own engagement, understanding how to create a culture of engagement. And then we realized that what was missing from this and what the next step was, I should say, was that managers wanted a way to be able to implement this. So we sat down and said, how do we write a filled manual for managers of how to implement magic or engagement? And we realized that managers didn't have a basic understanding of some of these basic concepts, you know, expectations or the contract or any of these things. So to answer your question, we really wrote this for anybody who manages or supervises a group of individuals.
Okay.
And that's basically the audience. Now, who can take additional information out of this? Certainly HR, no question about it. CEOs, all levels of the organization, but specifically written for somebody who leads a group of people.
So, gentlemen, anything else you'd like to add about the book in general?
We're excited. we hope that the ideas and the stories and the case studies that are presented really help bring clarity. And at the end of the day, we hope that organizations get better. And what we mean by that is people have a more enriching environment to work, that they're able to do their work to the very best, and that we fulfill our mission at DecisionWise, which is improving people and the organizations in which they operate. And I think there's some powerful concepts here. I think it's a fun read. It's not a bunch of checklists and drudgery. It's engaging, and it drives this point home, is that you're responsible for aligning the expectations that exist out there. And there's a whole lot of them. Mm-hmm. You got to get your arms around them. You got to understand them, and you got to bring them into alignment. And when you do that, you're really going to be successful. You know, here's what I'll end with my point is the old adage is that great managers or good managers manage expectations. Wrong. Great managers align expectations. And there's a big difference. And that's the mission of this book, is to help people understand you just don't react. You actually build and create the environment for your people to thrive. You just don't inherit it.
And I think what you said was very important. Ultimately, circling back to the purpose is we want to create more effective organizations. It wasn't that we wanted to create happy organizations or organizations that spend a lot of money on X. We want to create organizations that are effective. When we talk about things like the customer experience, that is a successful organization, but it's dictated by the experience those employees have. So in this book, we want to make sure we're covering a few different things. There are various topics that are in this, but really some main points of this is that expectation alignment, the understanding that I need to set expectations or clarify those expectations, and then I need to manage around those expectations and align those expectations. Matt's point was a great one. This is about expectation alignment, not about managing. The second piece is, how do I create an organization where the concept of customer experience or customer service thrives? Well, it's through creating this employee experience. Again, the law of congruent experience is what we coined this, the idea that my customer experience, and therefore the success of the organization, is going to be based on that employee experience. And the third part of this is the idea of the contracts, understanding that in order to receive this alignment, we need to set these contracts in place. And the degree to which we succeed here is the degree to which those contracts are specified and honored. We intentionally wrote this book for all audiences, meaning that anyone who manages a group of people or individuals would understand this. We use case studies, as Matt mentioned. We use academic studies. But we put this in a way that people understand, and that's what we wrote this for.
In layman's terms,
so that anyone can enjoy it, yet there's that statistical and scientific rigor behind it. This is based on now over 24 million survey responses. So this is not just data that came out of our head that we thought would be a nice book. This is scientific research, but it's written in a way that anyone can take it and apply it.
Tracy and Matt, thank you very much. The book, The Employee Experience, How to Attract Talent, Retain Top Performers, and Drive Results, will be published on January 30th, 2017. The publisher is Wiley, and if you'd like to learn more about the book, you can visit the URL employee-x.com. Or you can also find the book now. It's on all of the major bookseller sites. You can pre-order the book. We have some special bundle discounts at our website at employee-x.com. Or you can just order it conventionally from Amazon or any other reseller. Thank you very much for attending, and we hope to have you join us on our next podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charles.